You're tuned in to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
Welcome back, folks. This is The American Journal. Third hour is on. Support us at InfoWarsStore.com. I'll be joined by my guest, Sharika Soule, in just a moment. But I wanted to go to... Whoa, that looks awesome. I hadn't seen that title sequence before. Support us, folks. Go to InfoWarsStore.com to keep this crew churning out the incredible art they create. I want to go to a video now that we played before, and we'll start about 45 seconds in. This is a Chinese professor working for the Chinese government telling a story about his experience in America. I wanted to play this in comparison to the video that you just saw of a lowly British pub owner demanding that his prime minister get the hell out, as is his God-given right to do as the king of his own castle. Here's what it looks like when you lose that right. Let's watch. He says, so here's my story. It was, because we're on live streaming, millions of people are watching, I can't give full details. I can't turn them in. It was in 2015. Before the second last time President Xi visited the U.S., everybody in the system needed to warm things up for him, the way one organization in the party did the warm-up was to gain some publicity. The book, Xi Jinping, The Governance of China, we will launch the first English edition in the U.S. by having a press conference before his arrival to build him some momentum. Who will do this job? Just like today, they thought, I'm very good at fooling the aliens. That's how Chinese people talk about Westerners, by the way. He's like, they know I'm good at fooling the idiots, so they sent me, because they see how I conned them, which they thought was very effective, so I would be the host and part of the panel. It was just like we're doing today, I being the host and speaker. The high officials picked the venue, told us to go to Politics and Prose, 3:30 p.m. next Thursday. It's on Connecticut Avenue in Washington. Number 2650, I think. We'll publish the new book there. So we went there to make the booking. Things are run very differently in China and the U.S. With such short notice, it was very difficult to book the place. The owner said arrogantly, sorry, can't do it. Wow, how arrogant of him. So I asked him, which author booked the place for that time frame? For what? There's nothing money can't buy. If one bundle of cash can't, I'll throw in another. Of course, that's only my style of working. Still, the owner said arrogantly, sorry, but I won't tell you which author. He wants to bribe the author to get the time frame. We have principles. He was very arrogant, very pretentious. Later, I learned he was a Democrat. Although a Democrat, he used to be a journalist in Asia, and he had some opinions on our party, which is why he refused to play through. I thought it was over. We got to find another venue or time. So we escalated to the high officials. I was just helping out anyway. So anyway, they eventually get in contact with somebody in the U.S. government who basically leans on the guy and forces him to make his place available, which is a betrayal. Because this is the point of America. It doesn't matter if you're the president of China. It doesn't matter if you're the Queen of England. It doesn't matter if you're the Archbishop of Timbuktu. You don't outrank an American. An American is under no obligation to provide their establishment or their work or their complicity in what you want to do. And if an American citizen wants to say, screw the Communist Party, you don't get to use my venue to spread your propaganda, then that's his unalienable right. And you have to deal with that. They consider that arrogant. So arrogant to deny us. And maybe it is a little bit arrogant, but it's an arrogance we've earned. Because we've set up a system where the average person gets to kick out the prime minister. He gets to refuse the president of China. And is the king of his own castle. That is the liberty of the West. That's what we're losing. And we're losing it to scumbags like that. The InfoWars system is very simple. We tell you the truth about what's going on in the world, and we ask that you support us in exchange. If we don't tell you the truth, you probably won't support us. That's our only incentive. All we have is you, the InfoWars audience. And just like our information has to be good, or else we can't expect your support, well, our products have to be good, or we can't expect you to be returning customers. And everybody knows some of the bombshell, incredible, iconic supplements at InfoWarsStore.com. But what some InfoWars audience members don't know about is the InfoWars MD line of supplements. This is our premium line of supplements, and there's something for everybody here. This is the newest line of supplements from InfoWars, designed to boost vitality and enhance overall well-being, available exclusively at InfoWarsStore.com. Whether you're looking to support immune health, improve cognitive function, or increase energy levels, our meticulously crafted formulations cater to your diverse needs, only at InfoWarsStore.com.
Taking a record of the hearts and minds of the American people, it's the American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the American Journal, InfoWars.com. InfoWarsStore.com is how you support us. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Very happy to welcome my guest, Sharika Soule. She's a podcast host and a writer for the Gateway Pundit. She's the host of the Divested Diary podcast, a podcast that discusses politics, relationships, and black culture openly and honestly without the burden of political correctness. You can find the website divesteddiary.com or follow Sharika at SharikaSoul84 on X. Sharika, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Harrison. I love being here.
Well, thank you. We love having you. Very good to talk to you. Tell us about your podcast. What is the name of it mean, Divested Diary? Why'd you name your podcast that? What's that mean to you?
Divestment is essentially a process in which Black Americans, specifically Black women, wake up to how their role, which is usually controlled by the Democrat Party, is to essentially dedicate their lives to hating white people, feeling oppressed, and essentially not having any hope outside of fighting the white man, a simulation of defeat the white man, if you will. I think that that puts Black women in a place where we are a symbol of white hate, and it's not ideal for us to have a quality of life if we're spending our lives screaming about how much we hate white people, et cetera, et cetera. So divestment for me is about a Black woman realizing that there is more to life than being an operation for the Democrat Party by fighting the cops and essentially hating white people, that we can do more, we can be more. And we also need to start taking serious accountability for the violence in the Black community.
Mm. And so divesting is rejecting that mindset and embracing a healthier one, because it's really a self-sabotaging mindset, isn't it? I mean, it's convincing people to put themselves in a position where they'll never be good enough. So they'll always have to compare themselves to somebody else. They're always, you know, in this state of sort of jealousy and envy, and, you know, your life is bad because, you know, these other people exist out there. It's putting the Black community in America in a state of arrested development, right? I mean, it's bad for them, right? It's not even like you should stop doing this because stop being mean to white people. It's like, no, you're holding yourself back with this mindset. Do I have that right?
Exactly. I think that, as I said, you know, Black women have become a symbol of white hate. It's including Black men. We've become a symbol that is violence and resentment and not really wanting to get along. And I think divesting from the mindset that we are a victim just because white people exist is very crucial to our quality of life. Mm-hmm. We are outnumbered in America, and to go around having so much vitriol and hate towards a group of people that adopt our children when we're not able to care for them is ridiculous. And it's time for us to divest to better mindset and stop regressing as if this is 1942.
Right. Just how are you ever going to, you know, set things right in your own community if you can blame every problem on some outside force you can't control? That's what always comes to my mind when you hear these really, I mean, horrifying statistics. At least they're horrifying to me. Things like 75% of Black births are outside of wedlock. I mean, that's crazy that only one in four black children is born with their parents married and in a stable relationship, that's a recipe for disaster. And that's not something that's been inflicted. I mean, there's been, you know, Planned Parenthood had a part to play in this. Welfare had a very hard, large part to play in this. There have been incentives that have kept black people sort of in this, you know, feedback loop. But it's not going to be solved by an outside force. It has to be solved by an inside force, right? I mean, what do you see as the biggest issues facing the black community right now? And how is this mindset of hatred, you know, holding them back and stopping them from solving these problems?
The black community has never built a viable nation that protects their women and children. We have always relied on other races to survive. The number one thing that black people need to do right now is to take accountability, because right now we are creating a new justified racism against us. When we are a symbol of hate towards other races, when we are allowed to kill other races without any repercussions, we are creating an environment to which there will be justified hate against us. So accountability for our actions, like the crime rate, child abuse, and, you know, generally traumatizing other people with our violence, such as we try to hold white people accountable for their actions. We need to be held accountable. We need to take accountability. And that's the only step forward.
And you know what? If there's one thing white people are really good at, it's taking accountability. And it's just one of the things that I've noticed, like the black community can be sort of psyoped into like coming out and supporting and making into a savior, the messiah, you know, somebody like George Floyd, who is despicable. He's a total criminal. And, you know, maybe he didn't deserve to be, you know, killed on the street. Nobody deserves to, you know, be executed by the police. We can all agree on that. But you're going to make this guy the symbol of your community? It's like, you can never see the white people do. White people wouldn't do that. We disavow our criminals and, you know, distance ourselves from them. But the black community is constantly, you know, it's like there are people out there that you can celebrate and uphold and go, look, I mean, look at Ben Carson, right? He's this like groundbreaking neurosurgeon. Where are the statues to him? No statues to Ben Carson, infinite statues of George Floyd. I mean, how do people not see that this is an attack on the black community? They actually think they're like supporting the black community by supporting this obsession with and acceptance of criminality. It's sick.
It is sick. And the low expectations. That's what I say about Kamala Harris. She uses abortion to pander for black votes. Abortion is something that is, you know, unaliving many black Americans in the country. It is a huge source of why we are not equal when it comes to numbers. It is hard to be equal to white people in numbers when we are essentially slaughtering our entire race every year via an abortion. Mm-hmm. And Kamala uses abortion to pander to black votes. So there's a lot of accountability we need to do, and we need to start thinking critically about some of our actions and how that is shaping the narrative around us. We cannot continuously get angry at people for what they see. They see the violence, they see the lack of critical thinking when it comes to how we should vote, and they see our unwillingness to take accountability for our actions and our equal contributions to crime in America.
Yeah, it really is. And it's difficult to have these conversations. I mean, how did you get into having these conversations, and what was it like for you starting to believe these things and talk about these things? I can't imagine it's been easy, because you're really trying to shine a light on the black community and say, hey, there's stuff we got to fix up. You can't just blame white people. That's not a very popular sentiment, you know, in the mainstream media. You know, so how did you start talking about this, and what's been your experience talking about this?
Well, I've always kind of had this idea that the race conversations were not rooted in reality. I'm an adoptee, so that means the black men and the black women in my family were not protecting the children. They were not good people. They did not do what needs to be done to ensure that the black unit stay together. So I find it very laughable when I see black men and black women screaming about white people while simultaneously handing their children over to the white population to raise. Right. I've never been able to take that seriously. So for me, having the conversation, I've always had a very rational starting point. If we're going to talk about how white people treat us, we need to be talking about how we treat us, how we treat our children. You know, no one's ever going to take a black man seriously who has a white person having his children, you know, raising his children. And then you're asking that white family to also pay you reparations while they're raising your children. So I kind of always just, you know, been very bold with it because I am adopted. It did. Black violence has affected me.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a strange sort of concept in, at least in the media and in the wider consciousness, that like if you do anything other than pander to black people, it's because you hate them and want to destroy them. And it's literally the exact opposite. If you look at history and you look at the success that black Americans have had and the failures that they've had, to me, it's pretty clear. It's like for the 100 years after slavery, it was like a rocket ship. Like by the 1960s, they were, you know, better than white Americans statistically in like income and family staying together and birth rates and like everything. They were doing amazingly well considered where they were a century before. And then comes the welfare programs, and then come these things that are ostensibly, supposedly meant to help the community. And yet it's at that point that you start seeing it sort of degrade, and you start having the out of wedlock births, and you start having the communities come apart. And so it's like, all right, this thing that supposedly was supposed to help the black community has in fact contributed to destroying it. So how are you still supporting this? How do you think just, you know, throwing more money at the problem is going to solve it? And you think I'm evil for opposing that? It's all very backwards, isn't it? I mean, this is what it's like to love the black community, is to actually want them to pull themselves up by the bootstraps and, you know, not rely on welfare handouts or any of the other things that are the only thing that are ever offered in terms of helping out the black community, or handouts and giveaways and reparations. That doesn't help anybody, does it?
No, it really doesn't. And again, we're at a time where accountability is very crucial. As I said, black skin over time is becoming a symbol of white hate. That is not going to bring us a high quality of life in America, where it is predominantly white. We have completely regressed into where we should be going. We should be progressing. And when people are wanting us to do better, they're called racists. So it's very hard to have conversations about black violence in schools, domestic violence against black women, when those conversations are guarded, by accusations of racism. Mm-hmm. And I feel that that is very low IQ. I feel it's doing us a huge disservice. And as I said, we can't keep getting frustrated when people are commenting on what they see. They see us being aggressive. They see us not taking accountability, killing other races, killing white children, and still wanting to be the victim in society. It just needs to end.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I don't know, for me, I grew up in Houston. I was always like a minority in all the schools I went to. I definitely see sort of across the political spectrum, but like a real reticence to just like speak honestly about this stuff. And I guess you can call it, you know, low expectations, soft bigotry of low expectations. You know, there are these terms for it, but it's a very real thing that liberals, there is some sort of like innate, like, oh, these poor black, we can't hold them up to the same standard as us white people. They're just black, so we have to take care of them. And like, I don't see how more people don't recognize this and are sort of turned off by it. It seems obvious to me. If I was a black person, I would feel very disrespected that, you know, white liberals think they have to coddle me and care for me and that I couldn't achieve anything myself. It's like, I want black people to be strong. I want them to not have to rely on anybody. But I'm considered the hateful one. How backwards is this? Is there a way to talk about this that can like break through these mindsets that people don't even know they have?
I like to point out, you know, something that I see black liberals do is when I talk about black pedophilia, black violence, they'll say, well, the white man does that too. And my response is always, well, the white man also built the judicial system. They created a program to address the pedophiles and the violent people in the community. And the black Americans, we have done nothing of the sort. So it is time to have that conversation. And I know that can be confrontational, but to have these conversations, I think people need to stop fearing, specifically the white population. Mm-hmm. Stop fearing that when you have a valid criticism that has to do with your safety, protecting your home, a valid criticism for other races, stop fearing that you're going to be called racist. Because at the end of the day, it's just a mean word. what right. the real problem is that we are contributing to a portion of the crime rate in America, causing chaos, adding to the depression, the anxiety, and the trauma that other Americans are going through. And there's no getting through that without extremely direct honesty. Black Americans are dangerous, they are violent, and we need to take accountability to better America.
Yeah, and the statistics prove that. I mean, everybody knows that. This is kind of the absurd thing about this, right, is it's not like you're going to go into a black community and go, man, there's a lot of violence here. And people are going to go, really? I had no idea. I mean, everybody, you know, everybody knows that, you know, statistically, it's like 13% of the population. But actually, it's a much smaller amount because it's mostly young black men, which is like, you know, half of the 13%. So you've got this, you know, tiny population that's committing 50% of the crime in the United States. That's a problem that we should be able to talk about. And if you can't talk about it, how are you ever going to solve it? And if you can't ever solve it, then how are you ever going to have equality between these two populations? Again, this all seems obvious to me, but it seems like we're hamstrung by these names that we're called. It's incredibly frustrating. And again, I'll often say, you know, I'm like, I don't care what color you are. I don't care what color or creed, like, if you're American, I'm American, we're on the same team. And I get accused by people going, you don't have to pander to people. You don't have to qualify your statement. It's like, I'm just telling the truth. It's just how it is. We can stop the division, and it's not hateful to talk about these issues. And yet they want to make it seem hateful. I think nationalism cures these problems. I think when we can recognize that we're American first and foremost, everything else, we can still be different. We can be at odds in some cases, but it's us against the world, and it's you and me versus every other country and every foreigner that's not on our team. Is that not a simple concept to you know, understand and to agree with? And is American nationalism not a cure to a lot of these problems?
I think it is the cure, but I think that one thing well-meaning white people misunderstand is that there is a sector of the black community that does not want peace. They want to conquer and control and essentially make white people suffer. Sane black people are not sitting online demanding that 17-year-old white kids apologize for tweets. Okay. They're not sitting online demanding that white people bend over and treat us like gods. We are going about our day, living our lives, you know? And so one thing that I think has to be recognized, which goes back to, I feel other races need to stop feeling like they can't talk about these issues without fear of backlash. And that goes to us being honest. I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought a little bit. But basically, what I'm saying is we need to take accountability, and people need to not be afraid to call us out. It's not helping us get along with people. It's making people resent us at the end of the day.
Totally. Totally. No, I get exactly what you're saying. And you're absolutely right. And the problem is that because there are white people that don't want peace either, but they don't have the backing of the institutions. They don't have the backing of the media. It's the radicals on the left, and, you know, the black radicals, what, you know, the divisive people, the people that hate white people. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're the ones that get support. They get, you know, they can get away with anything. They get whatever they want. They can hold riots and the police kneel to them. So it's like it's a systemic thing, and it's obviously by design and on purpose. They don't want the black people like yourself or like others that we have on the show regularly who are pointing out what you're pointing out, that like, hey, there's problems in the black community and it's up to us to fix it, and it's not white people's fault, and dominating white people is not a positive or peaceful way into the future. You guys get shut down at every pass. And again, I just wonder how people don't see this for what it is, how you have this population that's so distrustful of the establishment, rightfully so, right? I totally get why black people would be suspicious of the American government. That's not a shock to me. And yet they don't see that all of these institutions that they don't trust are pretending to be on their side and supporting these movements. I mean, again, how do we wake people up to realize that this is not empowering anybody?
The truth will set us free. I really believe that as long as we stop worrying about hurting people's feelings, I think it's just the truth. There's nothing wrong with talking about the violence in the black community. If I am so nauseated from every day being told white people this, white people do this, white people do this, like I'm 40 years old now. So I've been listening to this for a long time. I'm ready for a new conversation. I'm ready just to discuss what's happening with the Black community. I'm ready to discuss why so many are holding on to a very obvious lie that if we side with conservatives, we will end up slaves or be killed. This is a very obvious lie, has been told to us since Obama. Okay. Obama has gone and come. You know what I'm trying to say in that, yeah, in that sense. We have new presidents. I'm still standing. Okay. Yeah. And so it's just time for us to move on. And we can't move on unless we're given a comfortable space. I have been very much supported by the conservative side. And without that support, I don't know that I would have had the courage to continue trying to talk about divestment and why it's better for Black people to let go of ghetto culture and things like that. It was the support of the white community and conservative community that made me feel that I was doing the right thing. And I think if we continue to encourage these conversations, more Black people will come out. The good ones are shy, okay? They're not online like the crazy liberals screaming about how much they hate white women.
Right. No, exactly. No, the typical Black person is just doing their job, hanging out with their family. Like, yeah, there can be a misapprehension with the scale and intensity of some of the online activism that can really get insane. But again, it's because they have the support of they're not going to get banned for saying the most outrageous stuff, because that's not the way the censorship program is set up. One thing I don't understand about it is like you got these videos, we've been playing some of them on screen, where it's like white people like kissing the shoes of Black people. And I just think like, how are you even okay with that? I try to imagine myself like an Asian person coming up and be like, a white person, let me kiss your feet. I'd be like, get up, dude. Like, what are you talking? I don't want that. That's weird. So there's this spiritual sort of sickness that's like, yes, grovel for me, but beg for mercy. It's like, it really is kind of evil at the heart of it, in a Christian sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that white guilt is the door to Black genocide. When white people are feeling guilty about racism, whatever, it just creates an environment within the Black community that makes predators, murderers, gangbangers, people that actually cause harm to other Americans feel very comfortable, because they know the police show up, you guys are racist. And there's going to be a bunch of people online who will fight the good fight, quote unquote, start a change.org petition to try to get this individual freed from this heinous crime that they've committed. So white guilt is what is actively holding us back. And I also want to say that fighting racism is not going to fix inflation. It's just not. It's not going to ever fix the problems that we have.
Right.
The only thing that's going to fix us is being honest with each other. At this time.
No, I love it, because it's like, it's the type of statement that you shouldn't have to make it, right? It's like, I don't know, eating fish isn't going to cure your cancer. It's like, yes, obviously, no. Yeah, focusing on racism isn't going to solve any of the actual problems that we're dealing with. It only makes things worse. I'd love to have you hang around for at least one more segment, because I want to talk about sort of the way that the Trump campaign is dealing with race. And there's always an issue of, oh, we're going to get the Black vote this time, and whether that ever comes to fruition. I want to get into sort of the political atmosphere around the presidential campaign on the other side with Sharika Soul, my guest. You can find her website, divesteddiary.com, where she does the Divested Diary podcast. Sharika Soul 84 on X. We'll be right back on the other side. Stay with us.
Unless you've been hiding under a rock, you know that turmeric does incredible things for inflammation, your joints, your immune system, your whole body. Well, we came out with Body's Ultimate Turmeric Formula 6 years ago. And I was wanting to come out with a turmeric formula, so I talked to some of the big suppliers. I said, what's the strongest curcuminoid you have? And they said, it's like 75%. Regular turmeric's just raw, 4 or 5% still has a great effect. I said, well, what's the strongest concentrate you can make? They came back a few months later and they said 95%. This is it. Body's Ultimate Turmeric Formula, been sold out for months. Back in stock is 95% curcuminoid. And it does incredible things for your body. My wife's a big sports person. She's in great shape, plays tennis, lifts weights all day. But she has joint pain. And years ago, she was taking these horse pills of turmeric. She'd take 3 or 4, would give her relief. I said, try this. She looked at the back. She said, this is lower milligrams. I said, yeah. but that's because it's concentrate. She took it. She said one pill had the effect of the big four horse pills she was taking. So again, ladies and gentlemen, this is an amazing product. It's back in stock at InfoWarsStore.com. And it's not just the 95% humanoid. It's organic spearmint, sage, lemon balm, and thyme leaves, pepperine from black pepper. So it's an amazing formula. It's exclusively available at InfoWarsStore.com. And it could be our last run. They're trying to shut us down. And please don't take that for granted. We get shut down, people go, whoa, he wasn't BSing. On my children, I'm not BSing. We're close to being shut down. We need support right now. Plus, these are great products. Please go to InfoWarsStore.com. This is going to sell out. Please support the broadcast. Get in other products. Get T-shirts, books, films. We need support now. These are great products. Thank you for your support. Thank you for your action. InfoWarsStore.com.
Your grandma died all alone in the hospital. Your wife was fired over a mandate. Your teenage son has heart problems. You lost your business. They kicked you off of social media. Your two-year-old was forced to wear a mask. And now they want you to forget about the whole thing. Oh, hell no. We will never forget.
Jones.
You're tuned in to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
I'm back, ladies and gentlemen. This is American Journal. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. We are here fighting back against the insanity, against the tyranny that is slowly but surely being locked around all of our necks and the insanity that keeps us from fighting back against it. Joining me on this mission is Sharika Soul. She is the host of the Divested Diary podcast. You can go to divesteddiary.com or follow her on X at SharikaSoul84. Talking about sort of the racial topics in America and what we can do to, you know, to break out, like I said, of the madness that's keeping us locked in this continual loop of blame and hatred and my tax dollars being stolen and given to people who despise me. I don't like it, Sharika. What is your take? I want to play a video. I just happened to come across it today, and it's sort of perfect. I'd love to get your take on it. It's a woman explaining why she thinks black people should vote for Trump, and we're seeing some movement in that direction, more so than maybe any other Republican in my lifetime. What do you think is going to be the outcome this election with black people and Trump? Are they going to vote for him? Have they been tricked into thinking Kamala represents them, which is absurd? But I mean, do you have any insight into this presidential campaign and how the black vote and the black identity is going to play into the contest?
Well, I exist on the Black side of TikTok, where Black women are divested, and they openly talk about politics, et cetera, without the liberal, you know, side effects. I see a lot of Black women are feeling that Kamala Harris is disingenuous. Right. The over-the-top ghetto pandering, the ghetto performance, the disingenuous reaching out of care, et cetera. It's really turning a lot of Black people off. Black men in general have not forgotten that as a county, attorney general of California, Kamala Harris was locking up Black people who had sick children. Mm. She did lock up a Black individual who had a terminally ill child and had that individual locked up for truancy. You would think that when a child is terminally sick, there's a little bit more understanding there. So there's a lot of Black people who have not forgotten, specifically Black women and Black men, what she has done and how her time in office has actually affected them. I do think that there's going to be a bigger, more profound support coming from Black America for Trump this year than anybody is prepared to see. It's overwhelming because even I'm like, wow, we're finally doing it. But I do think that Kamala is the catalyst to Black people finally saying, hey, look, man, you can't keep telling us the KKK is going to show up and that we need to vote for this person.
Right.
And everything is going to be fine. It's just gotten really ridiculous.
Yeah, it has. And again, I see it as disrespect. It's like you don't lie to somebody you respect, right? You don't try to trick or manipulate somebody that you actually have respect for. It's seems very disrespectful to me, but I'm not Black, so what do I know? I want to go to this video here. It's about a minute, 30 seconds. I think she makes some great points. I'd just love to get your take on this on the other side. And again, I'm just wondering whether this is an outlier, as it seems to be statistically, or whether this is a concept or a mindset that's permeating, you know, deeper into, you know, the consciousness of our fellow Americans in the Black variety. Let's go now to clip number 19. Here's a lady explaining why she and why all Black people should vote for Donald Trump.
I ain't never heard of him being racist prior to running for president. That's just me, though. I mean, because any two ways you look at it, the man won his presidency without the Black vote. What he need it for? What he need us for? Tell me what he need me for. He don't need me. But for some reason, he always get up on that stage talking about how low Black unemployment is. Because he legitimately cares. You never heard Obama get on stage talking about Black unemployment. He couldn't, because under his first 2 years with a Democratic Congress, it doubled. Black unemployment under Barack Obama doubled. How many of y'all know that? It doubled. It literally doubled. It went from 8% to 16%. How you get around that? No media say nothing about that. But Donald Trump getting it to the lowest it's ever been recorded. Like I said, he don't need us. He does not need the Black vote. The Black vote didn't put him in office. The Black vote ain't going to take him out of office. But the fact that he gets up there on them stages every chance he get and tells us how we are doing, because we, I ain't going to say that. We too crazy to realize it ourselves. You know what I'm saying? He ain't got to do that. He ain't got to get up there when he was running for president. He didn't have to get out there talking about, what do you have to lose? Vote for me. He didn't have to do that.
I just love that video. I just thought that was great. It just happened to come across it today, and thought I'd get your take on it. I mean, she's exactly right. I mean, what is there to say about that? She's right, isn't she?
Oh, she's definitely right. Most of Trump's support that is significant, that pushed him to win the presidency, was not Black support. His very first go around, he was obviously not as supported as he is now by the Black population. And so that was also one of my takeaways, that this man could really, if he wanted to, have nothing to do with us and not care about our problems. And he would have a very strong base. You know, he would still have his fans. The fact that he chooses to take his time when he is standing in front of millions of people to talk about the Black community and that he cares about our well-being and our success in this world, to me, that's somebody that actually does like us. That could never be a racist. You know, I'm from Iowa. Real racists do not invite ghetto Black people into their homes. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I'm just saying.
I get what you're saying. Yeah. I mean, it's just the idea that. But I guess this is the point, right? Is that it's so absurd, so ridiculous, this idea that Trump is a racist. I mean, he's been known in public life for 40 years. This was never an issue until he became president. And it's so absurd. It should be so obvious. But I guess this is the psychological lever that you can pull. I mean, people feel very strongly about this. And there's something about it that if you call somebody racist, a lot of Black people in America are going to just, better safe than sorry, that guy's a racist, right? Not going to give him the benefit of the doubt anymore. I mean, it really is that powerful. So what do you think, if you were like an advisor to Trump, do you think, would you tell him, you know, hammer this issue, like keep talking about Black jobs? Or would you say, look, Black people aren't going to vote for you. Just, you know, try to grow your base of white middle class. Like what would your advice be for Trump? Cause this is a big issue right now. People are sort of split on this, but that, you know, that video, I see videos like that and I'm like, okay, yeah, this is, it's working slowly but surely. The message is getting across. How would you advise Trump in terms of like getting the Black vote or not, you know, in the next election?
I would tell Trump to stick to what's been loyal to him. Mm-hmm. You know, Black people take loyalty very seriously. And I know Trump does. And I know that in the conservative space, loyalty matters as well. I would tell Trump to stick to who's been loyal to him and to go with that and not focus so much on getting Black women or Black men to vote for you, but keep focusing on the true message. All Black people understand we like money, okay? We don't like to not be able to pay our electricity bill. So if he keeps talking about things that have no discrimination, things we all go through, he will continue to win us over. To directly pander to us can sometimes be off-putting to Black people like me because I do not relate to rappers. I do right. not relate to those type of Black people. So sometimes that can be alienating to Black people like me. But when he talks about inflation and are we better off now than we were when he was president, those are the type of things that Black women, Black parents specifically, we hear you and we'll jump on board. And I think that's why he's seeing such a huge turnaround now on social media with people coming out and saying, you know what, I'm Black and I support this, because he's making sense.
You know, we're seeing it a lot, and I just hope it bears out statistically. I completely agree. Tell you what, stay with us. We'll close out the show with Sharika Soul, divesteddiary.com at Sharika Soul 84 on X. We'll finish out talking about the presidential campaign and some other wider political topics here. Stay with us. It's the American Journal, Infowars.com. Infowarsstore.com is where you go to support us. We'll be right back.
Alex Jones here with a call of action, a call to action for all the patriots out there watching or listening to this transmission. We can't fight the globalists without your support. And I can't think of an organization or group out there other than President Trump that has had more of an effect against the New World Order than this operation. And that's because of the grace of God and your support and our intrepid crew. And I'm asking you now at a critical time going into this election when the enemy is trying to shut everybody down and put everybody in prison, to double down and support the broadcast more than ever, to share the articles, the videos, the links, and to get the products at InfoWarsStore.com. So, 2.5 years ago, one of our great supporters and sponsors came forward and said, you ought to sell collectible cards with a little ingot of gold in it. These are very, very popular. And I went and looked it up online. It is very, very popular. It's not an investment. It's a collectible. If you want to get gold or silver and get the best prices on it, that's Dr. Kirk Elliott and KEPM.com/gold. Best group out there, highest ratings, amazing prices, the best. This is a collectible and a memento to know you supported the broadcast. Then the bankruptcy started, and the people that came in from the court said, we're not going to keep outside people's products in here in your store. And they kicked them back to the folks, despite the fact we'd already sold out of half of these in just a month. Well, now that I'm back in control of the company, And now that InfoWars itself is not in bankruptcy, I am able to offer these again, and this will help keep us on air. InfoWars has teamed up with one of the nation's leading mints to help you acquire this 24-carat .999 pure gold without paying thousands of dollars an ounce. Stock up on 24-carat .999 pure gold in the most popular size of 1/10 gram, an affordable, sleek card that fits your wallet, drawer, glove compartment, and is easy to travel with. They're amazing cards. It's got original art I came up with. It's got the little bar of gold in there. And it just lets you know that you supported the InfoWar. You'll have a historical memento as a keepsake for yourself, for your family, for your children, and your grandchildren. Because this is a historic fight. And this is a true piece of Americana that we have here. So I'm very, very proud of it. Again, we sold out of half of these a couple years ago. They got put back to the company that paid to have them made. Now that I'm back in control, they shipped them back into our warehouse, and the other half are available right now. I would imagine they'll sell out in a month or so. We've only got a few thousand of these left, and I cannot fund this operation without you doing this. Now, I want to be clear. I'm not telling you to buy this as a gold investment. That's not what this is. It's a little piece of gold in there. This is like on NPR, that still gets taxpayer money. They'll sell a coffee mug that costs them $5 or a baseball cap that costs them $10. And you make a $100 donation and you get that as a memento that you supported communism and the New World Order. I know you don't want to do that. This costs, I think they told me, more than $10 per card, something like that, $10 or $11. And so the other $80-something dollars will go to fund the operation. We need these funds to continue on in the fight. So get your collectible card, your piece of art, with the little piece of gold in it today, and you will help keep us on air. The decision is yours. This is a limited edition. It's something that people like. It's popular. And it's something that's collectible. But regardless, the real value is knowing you stood up for America at such a critical time that myself and President Trump and others are under such massive, massive, massive levels of attack. So please take action now at InfoWarsStore.com and get the exclusive InfoWars Limited Edition proprietary 24-carat 999 pure gold collectible. Thank you for your support. Get this collectible now and help keep us on air.
Divested Diary podcast, divesteddiary.com, on X at Sharika Soul 84. That's S-A-S-O-A-L, so S-H-A-R-I-K-A-S-O-A-L 84. Every time I do an interview, I say the people's Twitter names like 100 times, and there's always messages going, who was that? Can you link their – so I try to say it over and over. We're talking about race in America and the way it impacts politically. And there is an odd kind of – I don't know if it's hypocrisy or stupidity or what it is, but I feel like I feel the need to address this because I think it's especially prominent in the boomer generation, but I also felt it as well because I've admitted before, and people tell me to not bring it up. I voted for Obama in 2008, and part of it was this kind of idea is that I wanted to be a part of like the final nail in the coffin of American racism. That like you grow up hearing all these stories of Jim Crow and slavery and it's so bad. And of course you go up in the 90s and you didn't feel a lot of racial tension, not in Houston anyway. Like there wasn't this big divide. It didn't seem like a major topic of contention. So when 2008 rolls around, it was like, okay, symbolically we're moving on and I want to be a part of this. And I want to, You hear your grandparents talking about I marched in Alabama and they were a part of something great. And I want to be a part of something great. And again, even if you think that is ridiculous and you think I was stupid for believing that, maybe I was, but a lot of people still feel that. And even if they can't express it, there's something in them this is like a spiritual thing for them, that they're like atoning for the sins of the past and they're participating in this sort of this ceremony of handing off the torch, you know, because of our previous sins. And I feel like we got to break through that. I feel like we got to, because what happens is then those people give their support to the actual divisive Democratic, you know, identity politic people, and it only makes things worse. So it's sort of a long, rambling question, but Do you see that? And how do you think we get through to these people that think they're doing something, they're participating in an extended version of the civil rights movement by, you know, voting for Kamala because she's a black woman? I see this as such a barrier to us just actually solving problems, is this mindset. And even though I got through it, I don't know how to make other people like get over this idea and realize that they're being lied to. Because I realized I was lied to when Obama got into office and was making everything worse and was dividing people by race and, you know, saying he looked like, you know, Trayvon Martin looked like my son. It was like, okay, I got tricked. I thought I was voting to overcome this. Instead, they tricked me into voting to have this be a thing forever. I'm sorry for rambling, but do you see what I'm saying? Do you know what I'm saying? And do you see this in the Democrats, and how do we get through to them that like they're only perpetuating the problems they think they're solving?
Yeah, I totally agree. And as I said, the Black community has completely regressed. A lot of these people are cosplaying MLK. They want to be a reincarnation of MLK in a modern world as if it is still 1942 and we are trying to end segregation. Right. So a lot of them want to live out that dream. And when you have people like Kamala Harris being rewarded for putting on these ghetto performances, it keeps the Black community thinking, hey, maybe this is my way to success. Maybe this is my way to getting a better foot in my door, or in the door, et cetera. And it reinforces that this is the way Black people should behave, that this is a correct behavior. It's not a correct behavior. It is regressive, and it causes people to look at us as sociopath. I think it is very sociopathic to kill other races and then want to be seen as the number one victim in America.
Right. And again, you see this over and over where, you know, they'll never write black man in the headlines. It's always, you know, youth ruffian kills person on the train, you know, and it's like, okay, so it was a black person then, because they refuse to publish the race. But if you're hiding this information, how are you ever going to solve the problem? And it's a problem. It's a big problem, as we've acknowledged. And yet they can't solve it, and they keep pushing back on it. Well, one thing I wanted to ask you is, the end of the last segment, you mentioned, you said black people respect loyalty. I hadn't thought of it that way, that, you know, Trump has this base that's been loyal to him and that he needs to be loyal to them. And that by doing that, you know, that's something that will resonate with the black community. Can you expand a little bit on that? Because that's something I think, again, people don't understand. If you haven't lived around black people or gone to school with black people, if you only hear about black people on the evening news, you might not, you know, even understand how black culture, you know, operates in America. But I think you're exactly right that like loyalty, honor, these things actually exist very strongly in the black community, and they respect it. It's a little bit different than the way white Americans might conceive of these things. Can you expand a little bit on that?
Yes, I think that one thing that is changing the way black people are seeing Trump is the way he dealt with the criminal cases against him, and also the way that he's dealing with the assassination attempt. He is showing strength. He's showing loyalty to his cause because he's not running away. He's not saying, you know what, this is too hard. I'm going to keep fighting for black people, black Americans, white Americans, all Americans to have what they deserve in America. And that in itself is a huge olive branch to us. That's something we can trust. We're already being shown by Democrats that we cannot trust them again. They have told us for years that if we side with Trump, if we side with conservatives, we will turn into slaves, we'll be put back into slavery, and we will be lynched. And there are a lot of very stupid Black Americans who still believe that. The rest, as you can see, are coming around. They're starting to realize these things are not true. And so for us to see Trump continuously take all this on, including the criminal cases, including the death threats, that's a soldier. And that's something we understand, you know, thugging it out.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. No, it's so just almost funny to me. Like, it must be so funny, you know, to be in a position like yourself as a black woman that's conservative. Cause I could just see people coming up and going, Are you going to vote for Trump? He's let out Kodak Black. And it's like, why would you think I care about this? Like, it's all so just kind of silly. It's all very silly, but with obviously very real implications. And one of the controversies recently was Trump using the term black jobs as if that's an absurd thing to say. What's your take on that whole controversy? Because Trump said, you know, illegal immigrants are taking black jobs. People are saying, what the hell's a black job? It's like, I don't know a job a black person does. This isn't hard to figure out. But this is what they do. They take a positive thing from Trump going, hey, I'm defending black people's employment from foreign interlopers. And that somehow turned into him being racist somehow. What was your take on the black jobs controversy?
The left has nothing left. They don't have any actual criticism. They know that they have beat the racism thing with to a dead horse analogy, if you will. And so they're just using the buzzwords. Trump is racist. He said something about black people. That's basically what it's coming down to at this point. Anything he says with the word black into it, they're going to turn into a racist situation. And the stupid ones, they will go along with it. And the ones with bad intentions for the white community and for America, the extremists, black extremists, they will also go along with it. I think it's very ridiculous that we're looking at things like people saying mean words to the black population when the black population, we are the meanest ones to each other. Nobody says anything worse to us than we say to each other. So it's getting a little bit ridiculous at this time that there's such a rush to try to protect us from any sort of criticism and black job, et cetera. Mm-hmm. It was ridiculous. And again, I think that most people, the silent ones, can see through that. We know what he meant. And we are allowed to describe jobs as black. We're allowed to describe them as white. We're allowed to do that. There was nothing wrong with what Trump said at all.
No, 100%. I think it's just so absurd the way they have so many people in this country tricked into, you know, hating their fellow Americans while succumbing to people that are actively destroying them. As you point out, I mean, abortion, I think now, or at least in certain localities, I mean, more black babies are aborted than are born. So it's like not even an exaggeration to say that like the majority of black people are killed every year through abortion. And yet they promote it as if it's a civil right, you know, equivalent of being allowed to sit at the lunch counters. It's like, I don't know. Yeah, it's like they're desperate to be oppressed. It's like, man, they really wish they lived back in Jim Crow to have something to fight against. It's like, fight against the Chinese, fight against the New World Order, fight against the people destroying you. There's still a fight. It's just not with white people. You missed that boat. That was a while ago.
Exactly.
Oh, man. God, I don't know.
Exactly.
This stuff's also so absurd. It's hard to even wrap your mind around. I want to thank you for coming on. Sharika Soul has been my guest from the Divested Diary podcast, divesteddiary.com, at Sharika Soul 84 on X. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, Harrison.
My pleasure. Absolutely. Folks, that's about going to do it for us. I do want to remind you to go to InfoWarsStore.com to support everything that we do here. Just try to get to the truth. Just trying to empower humanity. Just a humble battleship against the armada of the globalists asking for you to lend a hand. Go to InfoWarsStore.com to guarantee that we're on the air and in the fight against the satanic New World Order, the pedophiles that are running our world into the ground. InfoWarsStore.com. Stay tuned for Alex Jones. It begins in 90 seconds.
I hate to use this analogy, but truth is the way to go, so I'll just use it. I remember growing up with all four of my grandparents. And first my dad's dad died, and then his mother died, and then my mother's father died, and my mother's mother died. And they were all amazing, and you think they're always going to be there. But one day they're dead. Well, it's the same thing with InfoWars. We've barely survived in the last few years, like right up to millimeters. And people then go, well, you're still on air. You must be invincible. We are shot up. The operation's bleeding to death. And that's okay. We've done our mission, and we're going to continue on even if this operation shut down. But that said, I don't want to prove to you by not going 100% and us shutting down that I wasn't BSing about this. We are very, very, very close to being shut down. And literally, the final products we have come in at InfoWarsStore.com could be the last time you get them. Now, there's a lot of stuff that goes into this, a lot of strategy. There's a good chance 50-50 we can stay on air. But if we don't get funding, we will shut down. I need you to go to InfoWarsStore.com and get amazing products. Now, these three have been bestsellers. And these are the last runs of them unless we get a deal done in the next few months. So we have Vitamin Mineral Fusion. We have the Vitamin C with Zinc and the Rose Hips that's so incredible. And we have Body's Ultimate Turmeric Formula back in stock. at InfoWarsStore.com, all discounted. But this could easily be the final run. So I need your support, plus their great products. Get it today at InfoWarsStore.com. And while you're there, get a book, get a film, get a t-shirt, whatever you do, share the article, share the videos, and pray for the broadcast. You've kept us on air this long, and I'm very thankful to all of you. But we are now at go moment here with this election, everything going on. We need your support now. So please go to InfoWarsStore.com right now and support us in this critical time.